and welcome to the Track and Food Podcast. You're joining us on another lovely, sunny day today in mid-March. My name is Jamie Ma. I'm your host as always. Joining me, not in person today, we're doing this via the interwebs, is my co-host, Mickey Cloud. How are you today, Mickey?
I'm doing as well as I could possibly be doing remotely. It's so weird.
Are you sick?
I'm not sick anymore. I had a little bit of a cold a couple weeks ago, which turned into a possible secondary contamination self-quarantine situation, which I'm just coming out of. So I feel pretty good. I think like everyone, I'm battling a little bit of the depressies, but my situation is pretty good all in all, considering.
Yeah, I feel like the world is crumbling down. I got no basketball. I can't do anything. I can't work. I can't see my
no basketball. I know. Yeah. It's tough. So for everyone listening, this is obviously a special podcast. Jamie and I talked a little bit about A, releasing our episode with Angus Ann, and B, doing another show. We had a dialogue back and forth. We weren't sure if we wanted to do it. But I think given the circumstances and the feedback from people, we kind of wanted to do a special kind of episode to discuss, mostly in a positive light, what's going on. But in order to do that, we have a guest.
We do. Our guest today is James Ironzad. He's a returning guest. If you've listened to an episode that we had with him the past fall, he came on. He's one of the co-owners of Gooseneck Hospitality here in Vancouver. You think Wildebeest, Bufala, Bells and Whistles, Lucky Taco. James, how are you today? Thanks for joining us as always.
Thanks for having me, boys. I'm doing okay.
This is definitely trying times for all of us. I guess the first thing we want to ask you, and Mickey, you can obviously chime in on this as well, is how are you both handling this whole kind of experience? I mean, James, for you, especially as a restaurateur and someone who employs a large amount of people working, obviously, in the industry that we love, the restaurant industry. Yeah, how has this been? I mean, for you, I mean, I'm sure this has been a big roller coaster ride for you of emotions.
Yeah, it's been an incredibly difficult week. I wish I could be a little bit sunnier about what's going on, but unfortunately, it's been pretty rough. You know, the sun's shining, and I've been spending a lot of time with our staff and management the last few days, and it's lovely to see how positive everybody's keeping and just really coming together to do whatever they can for each other, which obviously really warms my heart. But yeah, we made the choice to close after a Sunday night service at all five of our locations. And that's tough, you know. Obviously, that came with laying off a lot of people, which, you know, is pretty heartbreaking. But certainly somewhat of a comfort knowing that it was, you know, absolutely the best decision in terms of flattening the curve and also making sure that our staff can get themselves sorted on their employment insurance as quickly as possible. So yeah, I mean, all of that has been very, very intense to deal with and to manage. You know, it's 165 people in my case, you know, and I'm certainly nothing, you know, exceptional in this case. Like, there are smaller businesses, much bigger businesses, all dealing with the same thing within the hospitality sector. And it's logistically a lot going on. But again, so far, we've, I think, done as good of a job as possible and getting everybody hopefully what they need. So,
well, I think you guys were, I remember we had a chat over text, and you guys were one of the first like standalones that I think that we're willing to make this sacrifice.
Yeah.
Obviously followed by a litany of other restaurants, which in my perspective, 100% the right call. So thank you to you and your company for doing that. And you guys were even ahead of us at the Fairmont, which is, I don't know, it was mind boggling to me. Like, obviously people listening know that Jamie and I work for the Fairmont. We just on Wednesday got the call that we are going to be shut down for an indefinite amount of time. So I think it's very commendable that the restaurant community, you know, everyone from Como to, well, basically everywhere shut down now.
Yeah.
That has done that because it's a really important part of, like you said, getting ahead of this thing that we're all facing on a global level. So,
yeah, you know, I think people's abilities and opportunities to absorb and gather information is different, you know, and some are busy. Maybe they're raising a family. Maybe they just choose to avoid the news for their own mental health, whatever the case may be. And you know, some people did it slower than others. And obviously it's nice to see the government stepped up at this point, and effective midnight this morning, like, you know, several hours ago, I mean, like as in Friday night, midnight, you know, it's actually, you're not allowed to be open as a restaurant anymore. So
yeah,
that's comforting, you know, much like, you know, closing the border to non-essential travel is comforting, you know, like whatever we can do to keep safe, I think is critical. I mean, I had my younger boy's birthday party at Bells and Whistles on Sunday afternoon. And, you know, just sitting around with some of his friend's parents that I know, and just looking around the room, and, you know, it was a beautiful day and it was busy. And, you know, we just felt so guilty, you know, just thinking about
yeah,
it.
And yeah, yeah.
Got home that night and spoke with Josh, and, you know, it just became so overwhelmingly clear that, like, it's just not responsible to continue. So, so yeah, you know, emergency manager meeting Monday morning and staff memo out by noon, and got everybody paid and records of employment issued. And,
how are your staff handling everything so far?
Pretty great. Yeah, they've been pretty inspiring.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is definitely uncharted territory for a lot of us, and or all of us. Yeah. You guys have any thoughts on so far on what the government has done for us?
Yeah, I do. Sorry about that. Government, you know, I on a municipal level, I think we're doing local level, I think we're doing pretty well so far, considering the amount of stuff that they have to deal with. Honestly, like it's pretty great, you know, how quickly they're mobilizing these last few days. And I think that, you know, it's difficult for the general public maybe to grasp the overwhelming amount of work that is required so incredibly quickly, you know, to take care of all of us at every level. So I'm comfortable and grateful for everything that's happening. And on a federal level as well, obviously, I mean, it's a lot to process. You know, there's been well over 500,000 applications for EI as of yesterday. That's a lot to process, you know. It's a heavy burden on everything from their technological capability, from a labor like manpower capability, from a supply capability. So I think, you know, obviously everybody needs to be a bit patient and realize that we're all in this together, and allow everything to kind of unfold as it is. You know, everyone's going to get sorted out. They're going to get their EI, and the funding is going to come. The support has to come, you know, from all levels of government, you know, whether it's municipally regarding, for example, property taxes for homeowners or small business owners, or, you know, on a federal level with regards to support for individuals. So, yeah, I think it's to be commended. They're moving as quickly as they can. I just spoke with this morning with Mike Weeb, who's on city council. He's a friend, and he's also a restaurateur from, you know, his life prior to public service. And, you know, he's an amazing guy. He's just so entrenched right now in what's going on. And, you know, the complexity and level of work that the city has to do right now in regards to taking care of all of us in ways such as enforcing, these guidelines about restaurants being closed, or planning out how they're going to free up hospital beds, you know, rent hotels to help people, the most vulnerable, you know, like Vancouver has like 10,000 people in it that are not in a position to be able to self-isolate, let alone have kitchens. So,
yeah,
you know, they're going to, you know, extraordinary steps right now to be able to house those people either on a temporary or semi-permanent basis right now, just to make sure that they're cared for, but also so that, again, we keep, you know, flattening the curve at all, in all that parts of society. So,
you guys think that we should go further in some ways? Like, I'm always curious about this because I've been thinking about it the last couple of days. Because, like, you know, the government, like certain community, or I shouldn't say community, certain areas of the world right now are obviously fully shut down. Like Italy,
yes.
I know New York State, they've gone through full lockdown. I know California has as well. But I mean, as far as like doing that, like, do you think we should even like go further and like liquor stores should be shut down and grocery stores should be minimized and stuff like this? Like, I'm always wondering about those things. Like, they're saying they're okay with people going outside, but I mean, I saw some images 2 days ago of people on a bright sunny day down in White Rock Pier, and it was like,
yeah,
packed. And it's like, it's,
yeah, I agree with you. It's too packed down there, honestly. I mean, you don't need to look at those awful images of, you know, spring break in Florida to,
you know, to get, terrible, so brutal. Know,
yeah. But you don't need to go that far away to see people congregating. Like, you talk about White Rock Pier or the beaches, you know, like, Councillor Weeb was telling me, you know, they're considering reopening the golf courses right now, not obviously to play, but just because the parks are so busy that they want to provide these other spaces for people to go for walks and have a picnic, you know, do whatever you can do to be outside and get some fresh air and some exercise, good for your mental health, you know, all of those things, but to do it with space.
Space, that's the key.
Space is the key. Space is just the key, you know, in all regards. Like, you know, they're about to release retail guidelines, restaurant guidelines, you know, for the city. You know, like, you look at these coffee shops being busy, the liquor store, you know, the liquor store I shop at, the staff told me they had 1,200 people in there the day before. Like, that's too much, yeah. You know, like, so we all need to get a little bit patient, have, you know, a lot of distance from each other when the lineups come, make sure that we're, you know, just allowing a few people in the store at a time, things like that, if we're going to continue like this, because, you know, it's a whole other level to just fully shut it down. I don't think we can do that with regards to supermarkets, obviously, like, you know, food is, you know, is just, it's fundamental, like, you know, it needs to be there. But, you know, whether it's, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with regards to like takeout at restaurants or or other shopping, but we really need to be careful with this, because in a society where we have these civil liberties, I know it's more difficult than it is, for example, in China to you know, to lock everything down and reduce their rate of spreading the virus as effectively as they have. You know, people want to have their freedoms, but I think that I hope that we don't need to see our mortality rate go considerably higher for people to realize the sacrifices that are necessary for us to actually get over this and get back to some sense of normalcy as soon as possible.
Did you guys know that that BC government can actually invoke a food rationing measure, like from a legal standpoint?
Yeah, wow.
So they can actually invoke a law, a temporary law, to allow grocery stores to not let people herd shop.
Yeah.
Which is what I see. I mean, we've been seeing empty shelves. Obviously, I see people. I was actually at the grocery store yesterday morning grabbing something.
Yeah.
And it was insane how many people were in there. I was like, this is, I just had that, like you said, James, that feeling of your kid's birthday party. I had that same feeling.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what do, am I going to get a bunch of food, or am I just going to shop what they recommend for, you know, a 2 week period or whatever?
Yeah.
I'm in a lucky situation because I live by myself at home. So I just have to worry about myself for food. Right. But, yeah. All that stuff has to come into consideration. But I mean, you're also dealing with a large population who are reading the internet and watching the news and getting all of this misinformation. So it's a really, really scary, reactionary thing that's happening right now.
Yeah.
James, are you getting, have you spoken with, like, are your landlords being okay with you guys when it comes to, like, paying your guys' rent while you guys are during this time? Is that something
that's come up? I mean, that's a big question I'm getting from everybody in our community.
Yeah.
And we've all been really in touch. It's really lovely to see. Dala from Super Baba started a Slack channel that, you know, I think it's getting close to a couple of hundred members on there now and growing. And I would encourage more people to get connected on that, because that's just, you know, housing, whether it's your home or your business, seems to be right up there, even ahead of food right now, in regards to what everybody's most concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you're a restaurant owner or a small business person, you really need to, you know, be proactive about that. You know, take a look at your lease, you know, do a search for words like continuity, business interruption, force majeure, act of God, you know, and find out exactly where you stand, you know, what your position is legally. Unfortunately, usually for financial reasons and for legal reasons, landlords are the ones that drop the, you know, the lease agreements, and often obviously they're kind of like tilted to their favor. So you gotta really be careful and go in through your leases and see what's going to happen. Because if you don't have an out, you know, such as act of God, force majeure, you know, something like that with regards to business interruption, you're technically in breach of your lease. So obviously everybody understands, and we're all, again, in this together. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like, you know, you can evict me necessarily from my restaurant and replace me with another tenant right now. So it doesn't really make any sense for a landlord to take a hard line. But, you know, it just, there's a chain here. You know, the business owner needs the support of the landlord. The landlord needs the support of the bank. And the bank may eventually need the support of the federal government to be able to make all of this work. So I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I know in France, they just put a freeze, like their president Macron put a freeze on all rents, I believe, residential and commercial.
Really?
So just a bit of a pause in time. Yeah, they did that a couple of days ago. And I really hope that that happens here as well, because, you know, obviously nobody should be losing their home or their business, you know, during this, because there's just no benefit for it. You know, you look at, I mean, obviously we're talking specifically about restaurants here, but, you know, I'll speak for myself. And I know that this represents the overwhelming majority of restaurant owners. We don't keep like a crazy amount of money at all in the bank account. You know, like we pay our staff, we pay our suppliers, margins are very thin. We take some money out for ourselves. There's, you know, the whole process is a cycle that relies on continual income. And when that income stops abruptly for us, like it did on Monday, the money runs out.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do your best, obviously, you know, to pay your staff first and foremost. And then there's a time the tough decisions have to be made, you know, like you can't just keep pumping in your personal money to pay your lease or, you know, like I'd love to be able to pay like all of the taxes that I owe this summer, you know, and I hope that I can, but you know, in from a patriotic sense, you know, from an ethical sense, but, you know, what if we can't afford that? You know, like most people, you know, have a little bit of extra money to get them through a few weeks maybe, but not months. So the support is going to have to come. And again, I appreciate that various levels of government are just, you know, they're doing things in order, you know, of importance. And I think those priorities are being made well. So
no, I agree with you on the Macron sentiment. I read that a couple of days ago as well, talking about how rent freeze, and I think that should be a priority for all governments globally. I think just like everyone's going through this at the same time, I think it's just press pause. Let's all get through this. Let's all make sure that everyone comes out alive and healthy, and we hopefully develop a herd immunity. And then, you know, we can all go back to, you know, we can all kind of collectively get together, decide, okay, cool, everyone's good, we're good to go. Let's start our society again. And then obviously everyone can, you know, get back to normal. And, you know, like you said, I mean, evicting anyone right now or having anyone have that stress on their shoulders right now is something that I don't think any one of us wants anyone to go through, especially because you want to make sure that people are focusing on their health and the health of their family members and everything like that. So just being stressed out. And I agree with you. I mean, I know the restaurant industry very well, just obviously working and knowing people like yourself that own restaurants. You know, none of us, very few of us have, you know, thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank. Most people don't. Most people are like you said, they're good for a couple of weeks, maybe a month, month and a half. But like you're talking, like, you know, some people might be off work till June. Some people might be off for quite a while. So that's asking a lot of people to really, you know, once the money runs out, it's a difficult thing. I'm actually working on a column idea of this idea is that I think coming out of this situation, just like how societies have come out of great upheavals in the past, whether it's, you know, the civil rights movement of the 1960s or the gay rights movement that has gone through over the last, you know, 30 or so years, that our collective society, I think what we're going to need to do is once we recalibrate, we need to really look at measures that we need to fix in not only in our economy, but in our society of like, we can't just go back to normal because these type of things generally happen. They will happen again. And we need to find ways to make sure that we're more not only prepared for the unexpected, but also prepared as a society to have it where our citizens are not on always teetering on the edge, where they're like, you know, that, you know, you, I think this has become a big flashpoint for us as a society, is to realize, holy shit, a lot of us are, you know, not fundamentally prepared for anything like this, not fundamentally prepared for major disruption. And what can we do as a society to fix that and to find ways to make sure that we have less inequality and we fight for things that are more just, and that we make sure that we are better prepared for things like this. And whether that comes from the government or that comes from a great people, I mean, you see it throughout the world in a lot of places, but like, we can't go back to the way we were. We have to figure out something to be make ourselves better. And I know that a lot of people are doing that right now. And, you know, we're seeing that right now, even in our community. I mean, you know, I'm sure that you're a part of this Break Bread initiative, the staff meal thing.
Yes.
I mean, today I saw this new launch by some of the guys from Taco Fino, the Vancouver F&B Relief Fund. I mean, these are things that are great. And I think we need to make sure that once we come out of this, that we continue this great community involvement. And it's unfortunate sometimes that we are willing and so generous with each other in times of stress, but I think we need to find a way to make sure that we're always like this. So, and it's a great learning lesson for all of us, I think. So, and it's so wonderful to see people just willing to go out there and help each other.
It is. Yeah. I think, as horrible as it is right now, and quite frankly, I think, you know, all signs seem to indicate that, you know, we're up for, you know, a few more very challenging weeks ahead as the numbers kind of do what they've done around the world. It's already kind of revealing so much to us, you know, in terms of how we do need to shift some things. And not just on a grand societal level, but, you know, just how we interact with each other, you know, like with regards to the hospitality industry. Like, I know that a lot of people I've spoken with have felt that this has kind of revealed how isolated they feel as an industry. And hopefully what's recognized through all this is, you know, the incredible warmth and truly genuine hospitality that exists in the people of this industry. And hopefully coming out of it, you know, we will feel a bit more supported, because I think we're going to see this, our sector, be a huge part of how we get through this as it pertains to the effect it has on society.
I sent you guys that link yesterday from the New York Times. Anybody yes. out there who's interested in reading this, it's called "Is Our Fight Against Coronavirus Worse Than the Disease?" It's written by David L. Katz. It's an opinion piece. I'm kind of curious to get you guys' thoughts on it. Basically, the piece, what it talks about is Dr. Katz talks about saying that maybe a good way for us to look at this virus or the spread of this virus and of finding a way to make sure that we take care of the most vulnerable would be to have most of society resume normal activities. And then what we do is we try to quarantine those above the age of 60, because they're the ones that are, looks like they're the most vulnerable in this situation. And then that way we can focus our medical and health community on them, and that way they're not over inundated with people like ourselves that are probably most likely going to be fine. And I'm kind of curious about that idea, because what he talks about is saying that this pandemic is obviously going to have grave effects for people when it comes to their health, but also that it's going to have even more monumental effects about our economy. And how, I don't know, it was kind of an interesting column. I'm just kind of curious to see what you guys thought about it. And I'll let you go first, James.
My issue with the article is that it predicates its point on what's happening around the world. And the fear is that the epicenter will shift from Europe over to the United States. Now, obviously, I have zero scientific credibility when I talk about anything, and that obviously just needs to be mentioned. But, you know, he's basing so much of his point on the fact that the deaths have been mainly clustered among the elderly. Mm-hmm. Well, it's also possible that that will hugely change in the United States when you've got these idiot kids like going down again to party at Mardi Gras, and it's going to ravage through that demographic of society in a way that it hasn't in, for example, China.
Yeah. And also the plus 60 thing is kind of a misnomer, because there have been cases ranging down until 25 years of age in the States. And it's not just people who are elderly, it's people who have compromised immune systems, right? Mm-hmm. And another thing that people don't talk about is how the virus can mutate. One thing that's so, the reason why I think that article, I can see that side of the point. And there was also this debate going on a couple of days ago with these two scientists in California. And I think it's important for articles like that to come out because you do create a dialogue. And it's important to see both sides of the coin. But the thing about it is this virus is so new that we're playing catch up. We're trying to figure out like even how long it stays on surfaces. What's the incubation time? Information's changing like on a daily basis about like A, what we know about the virus and B, how it behaves. And we're not even going to have, like I said before, or maybe I didn't mention this, but there won't even be a vaccine until probably about a year and a half from now. So when you combine all those things, like what's the alternative to not taking the drastic measures that we're taking, right? Which again, I think I'm echoing what you were saying, James, that was my contention with the article as well. But I mean, if you're having a dialogue about it, it's not a negative thing, right?
No, I agree with you. I mean, I don't know. It was kind of interesting to read just because like you hear a lot of people just saying that it's going to affect the majority of people over the age of 60, and especially people over the age of 70 and 80. They're like definitely the ones that are.
Yeah, well, like James was saying, for now.
For now, I agree with you. I'm not.
But the people who spread it. No, I'm just saying. But like the one thing the article misses is who are the majority of people who are spreading it? Young people.
But no, but what the author was trying to get at is that if you take away all the vulnerable ones, or the ones that you least think from the data that we've gained are the vulnerable, and you get all the young people to spread it amongst each other, what will develop is a herd immunity from that. So all the young people will eventually, you'll get a large percentage of the population that is herd immunity that probably won't be affected by it. Because the percentage
of herd immunity takes, you need to be infected with the virus three separate times. For herd immunity, and that's billions of people have to go through that process. Herd immunity doesn't happen overnight. Herd immunity takes years and years and years. We've had influenza and the flu for like 100 years, but when it first hit in the 1800s, it wiped out like 500 million people. Like the whole herd immunity angle is, it's nice and it's nice to think about, but realistically from a scientific perspective and everything that, and again, echoing James, I'm not an expert. I'm just going from all the information I've read online, but I have been pretty diligent in researching the last week and a half. Herd immunity takes a long time to happen.
No, I got
a vaccine. So
all I'm trying to say is that by doing that, you just what I'm trying to think about is the idea is like you don't want to have it where our hospitals are overrun by people that are like me and you who go to the hospital. We think that we're sick, we're not, and you don't want to have it where they're wasting energy on us, where they should be focusing their energy.
That's not what's happening.
Well, I know. I'm just saying.
They're not like, even testing. Like, I couldn't even get tested.
Well, no, that's the one thing. Well, I mean, that's one of the things that we're definitely going to have to come out of this is we're going to have to figure out ways to have, I don't know how you end up, how you barrel that up. That's one thing I'm kind of curious about when they talk about like getting everyone tested. That's what they say that the best way to control this is test.
And well, look at what Korea did, right? Korea opened drive-through testing and practiced social distancing from the very beginning. And they have an infection rate of 8,000, I think, now to date, with the lowest mortality rate of all. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about Korea's situation, I don't know if you guys knew this, they actually didn't close restaurants and bars and community centers. They all stayed open. It's just the population was like, okay, there was a clear message sent from the government. They're like, this is what we have to do. This is a huge epidemic. They were super ahead of it. And now, you know, I think they're on their third day of reporting new cases or something like that. But amazing. They didn't take all the extreme measures that we had, right?
I think one of the things that we can definitely learn from this, especially is like looking what other society or other cultures are doing and other countries are doing and being like, okay, what can we learn from them that they did that was obviously successful? And what can we learn not to do?
Yeah. And that's why the whole social distancing 14 days thing has, because that's the incubation time, right? It's four days to 14 days. So that's why they keep saying those. I know it sounds like nauseating now, but it's like 14 days social distancing because that's what they found has worked so far. But again, it's been 2 months, right? I think the first reported incident or case of positive identified coronavirus in the States was, I think, January 20th. That's fucking crazy. That timeline. It's like the end of March right now.
Yeah, there's an ethical question here of sacrifice, you know, like
absolutely.
For example, I'm seeing, you know, there's so many restaurants that are doing takeout business right now. And I'm of two minds about it. I mean, obviously my career, my life's work, my passion has been to be an entrepreneur in the hospitality industry. And so the thought that in this crisis, there are people that are still working, that are providing warmth and hospitality and serving food and, you know, and taking care of their community and being successful at it, you know, that warms my heart. But the other part of me is, you know, curious about, well, the food that they get from their suppliers, well, it comes from a warehouse and it goes through a delivery driver and it gets into the restaurant. And then it, you know, there are lots of people coming into contact with it. And how seriously are those people taking the responsibility that they have to self-isolate and to socially distance with others? And how safe is that? And right now, you know, we don't have that information. So
no, that's impossible.
You know, and so I'm a little worried about, you know, the unknown implications that this could have. And maybe we really do need to be doing more of a,
like, full lockdown.
Yeah. Shelter at home kind of system where it's a full lockdown. And we take those 2 weeks to actually let, you know, let the chips fall a little bit and get a better view of what's happening around us as a community.
Well, and that's something that I've definitely been grappling with as well. I think you echo exactly what my brain has been thinking, because like a couple of days ago, I went to Legacy and I was walking by and there must have been like 150 people waiting outside.
Yeah.
To get in, and it's busy. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, okay, I get it. But it's like, really, it's just like, this is kind of where do we like kind of like, okay, maybe like, is this definitely essential right now? And obviously they were limiting the amount of people going to the store, but at the end of the day, people were like waiting in line right next to each other. And it's like, but I thought about the same thing when it comes to takeout. Cause I'm like, yeah, James is saying it exactly right. There's probably four or five people in the kitchen making all that food, and they're probably close to each other, and they're probably touching people, and they're in contact with, like you said, suppliers and other people. And it's just like,
yeah,
it's, we limited it eventually, we have for sure. But it's also like, should we take that next step and just be like, you know what? Everything is done. And we all sit down in our houses for 3 weeks, and maybe that would be get us back.
Maybe that would be better. You know, like, I'm obviously, I want businesses and their staff to continue working. But again, there's this issue of sacrifice. Like, there is no food shortage right now. You know, again, speaking with Mike Weeb, the food supply chain is strong. You can go to your grocery store, you know, shop carefully as you need to, as you know, shop locally, you know, obviously would be a lovely gesture as well. You know, do what you need. But, you know, again, the more we can minimize this, I think might be better, especially giving some time. Like, I mean, we're ready to go with takeout at my restaurants. But, you know, I'm personally, and again, I'm not judging anybody that's moving forward with this. And I understand, because everything is happening so quickly, you know, everybody's genuinely trying to do the best that they can. But, you know, we're just kind of being a little bit patient, waiting to see some guidelines as to, from a health perspective, what should we be doing? You know, like,
yeah,
you know, just like stores, you know, are kind of figuring it out for themselves right now that, hey, maybe it's a good idea that we only let, you know, 5 or 10 people in the store at once. And yes, you're going to have to line up outside. And yes, it's going to start raining next week. And the lineup's going to have to, you know, be pretty long if everybody's 6 feet apart from each other. But these are the kind of sacrifices that need to be made for us to, you know, remain healthy.
That's what I'm bothering you for.
Yeah. I mean, this is all going to change next week once that rain comes. We're all going to be real sad.
Well, you know,
if you're not sad now with the sun.
Yeah, I mean, I love the sun, but I mean, if it helps keep people inside, then maybe it's not the worst, you know?
No, I think next week, I think I'm just going to spend the whole week and I'm just going to try to watch all the saddest movies I know.
So I'm curious, guys, since we've obviously, this is a very serious subject matter. We're all dealing with it in our own ways. Like, when was your aha moment that you knew that this was like, because we've dealt with this before, like with the whole SARS thing and Ebola. It just seems like here in North America, because we are a powerful country and a financially responsible country, I'm talking about Canada specifically, we haven't really, in my personal experience, I've never really thought that something like this could come, for lack of a better term, come to our country in a massively affecting way like it has. When was your like aha moment where you were like, okay, this is like a real thing. I need to be taking this really seriously. Because mine was when I read that article, how California shutting down all their bars and restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
I had that thought. I was like, is this going to happen here? And then the snowball chain mentally of like, holy shit, like, what's going to happen? What I'm going to do? When was your guys' moments? I'm curious to know.
Yeah, I mean, I think like many small business owners, you know, you tend to sometimes have a pretty active imagination and fear the worst. And so, you know, this is definitely something that I was worried about some time ago. You know, I'm not clairvoyant or anything. It wasn't like months ago, but we really started getting worried about it, I don't know, four or five weeks ago or something. And I never thought it would get this bad here. Or just, you know, push those thoughts away. But, you know, we started thinking about, you know, ways that we could make things a little safer, you know, help the perception of the public kind of still think of us and recognize all the, you know, the things that we do to keep them safe. But, you know, then it just snowballed so quickly, you know, like that's the craziest thing about this week is how fast so everything's fast. Happened.
Crazy. Yeah.
You know, that no matter how much you thought about it or how nihilistically you kind of thought about, you know, what could happen, you know, you're still just not prepared for what actually has been rolling out this week. So
what about you, Jamie? Was it when the NBA basketball season shut down?
Yep, I bet you it was.
Maybe. I kind of could see it coming. I think we all kind of had an idea that it was on its way, but
I didn't, man. Honestly, I didn't. I'm one of those, and I'm going to be completely honest here. I'm one of those ostrich head in the sand people. And like when I had my realization, I was like, this is fucking real. It was real. Cause I don't tend to read the news a lot, to be honest with you. I don't tend to, you know, I get all my news from my mom when we have lunch every couple of weeks. And that's how I was living my life the last like 4 years. So.
Well, you don't read the news. You don't stay up current events.
I do, but like my news sources are alternative news sources. So I'm on Al Jazeera a lot. So if people listening don't know what that is, it focuses more on Asia and the Middle East and Europe. But I don't read like anything from the US. No local stuff really. That's just kind of how, like I said, when Trump got elected, my brain just kind of broke. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. Fake news.
I mean, you could kind of see it coming its way. Obviously, I think I'm on the same side as both of you. I didn't think it was going to be this quick and this bad. And I honestly didn't think we'd end up having to shut down work and stuff like this. So that definitely caught me off guard. I think as it did for most people, especially for the length of time that, you know, because, you know, that it could end up being and how much of a disruption is going to be for a lot of us. I don't think any one of us could have imagined that we could all end up being off work for a couple months. I mean, I think that's going to be the hard part for all of us here is like, when are we going to be able to think about the idea of opening up our lives again? You know, like right now it's only been
and how different is it going to be? Well,
it hasn't even been a week yet. And so in the next 10 days, a lot of us are going to be paying rent or maybe not paying rent or whatever, but then, you know, we're going to be on EI and then April's going to come in. And then I think people's anxieties are going to start to raise once, you know, you're going to have to start thinking about maybe paying rent in May again. And then, you know, like as a restaurant industry, like how do we organize and collectively get together and think, okay, when can we start feeling comfortable opening up again? How do we know? That's the thing is we don't really know and everything's going to be like day to day. And I think that's going to be the hard part about, you know, bringing society back online again is how do we do this in a positive and respectful and also safe way that we can all kind of slowly start to resume our lives. But I mean, I think that's going to be very difficult. I mean, and economically, I think James, you're very touching on a very poignant point there. And I think I've seen what Justin Trudeau is trying to do right now. You're trying to kind of play both hands, right? You want to make sure that the health and well-being of your citizens is taken care of, but you also have to understand and respect the economic ramifications of, you know, both hands. And it's scary because, you know, you understand why people are doing takeout because they probably have food they want to get rid of and they want to make sure that they can still sort of maybe have some cash flow coming in. But it's also like, how do we balance that? And I don't know how this is going to play out. And I hope that it plays out better than we all hope. And I hope that people stay safe and minimize the tragicness of this. But this is definitely weird and uncharted territories for all of us. And it just, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to play out. And it just, it's kind of pretty scary. It's pretty, pretty weird. And it's kind of hard to stay positive, but you definitely know that you have to. But James, I'm just kind of curious, as someone who owns restaurants and is definitely going through this right now, is there anything that you've kind of gained from, because I know that you're well connected with a lot of people in the city and other restaurateurs, is there anything that you've gained that you want to pass on to other restaurateurs or people out there who maybe listen to this that maybe have some questions or maybe some fears or anything like that? Anything that you want to?
On a personal level, you know, I think it's really important that everybody stay really connected with each other right now because you know, this whole self-isolation thing can have some consequences that we may not fully recognize yet, just only because of the fact that, like you said, we're only a week into this. So obviously, you know, we're all adaptable, you know, as a species, and we'll learn to adjust and live with this, hopefully for not too long. But I think it's also important to realize that in the meantime, like Mickey was touching on with regards to, you know, hoarding or kind of putting yourself first, I think we just really need to make sure we stay a community, you know, be kind, be ethical, be compassionate, you know, and remember that, you know, some of us might have difficulty expressing some of the harder feelings that we're feeling through all this. So that's a big one. I would hope that everybody, and, you know, for anybody that, you know, knows me, then, you know, if you ever want to chat about anything, by all means, then, you know, call or email or text or whatever. And let's stay connected. As far as the industry is concerned, I think that it's going to be interesting to see how we can shift during the crisis, because we're going to need to find positive ways to make a contribution. You know, I don't know what that is yet, but I know that it's also very possible that we're not going to be measuring the amount of time that it's going to take for us to get back into the restaurants in weeks. It's going to be months, you know, it could be a long time. Certainly if things get worse as you know, around the world we've seen they have, then we need to be smart about it and just prepare for more time, you know, because consumer confidence, you know, is going to be a little tricky to get back in the way that's going to be able to get all of those people employed again. It's going to take maybe the confidence that comes with a vaccine, I would think, you know, and if that is going to take, I mean, I know that they're working on it, you know, at an unprecedented speed, but still, you know, these things just take time. So in the meantime, I mean, first of all, we just need to acknowledge that, because if anybody has the illusion that I think we're going to be getting back to work in a few weeks, you know, I think it's probably a good idea to, you know, again, I don't want to be a fearmonger, but it's just, you know, facts are facts. Like, we need to be careful about that, and we need to budget, you know, our energy accordingly. But, you know, how else can we help? You know, like, my conversation with Councillor Weave this morning was, okay, well, I have a restaurant right now that doesn't get used for anything. You know, it's got 5,000 square feet. It's in the downtown east side, and it has two commercial kitchens. You know, maybe we should be thinking about how can I use that to help the community, rather than thinking about when can I start selling $65 set tasting menus again. You know, because I really don't have any interest in doing that, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even know if Wildebeest will come back in its current form, because maybe that's not the kind of food that people will want. Maybe Lucky Taco or our pizzerias will be great. You know, that's maybe more humble food, but, you know, I don't know what the landscape's going to look like at that point. So let's think about other ways that we can work and contribute and make money too, obviously, because the economy needs to continue. Otherwise, you know, we're in a whole lot of trouble. But, but, you know, it's going to take a lot of innovation and resourcefulness, which our sector fortunately has in spades. So we need to tap into that, you know, over the coming weeks, and try to think outside the box and how we can help each other.
No, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's one thing that we've seen over the last week or week and a half is people finding new ways to be innovative and come up with ways of helping others. As I touched on earlier on with that Break Bread initiative, where, you know, community outreach and people are just letting people know where they can get takeout stuff, and the staff meal stuff that's been done with the McKenzie Room and the St. Mercy Group and Dachi and so on. And then that Vancouver F&B.
Did you see that Dan's Legacy is doing a bunch of stuff too?
Did you see that? Yeah, I sent a message to them actually yesterday saying that if they need any help from us, that I offered your services, by the way. I didn't ask you.
Absolutely. It goes without saying. I'm more than willing to help. I was actually looking online about volunteer opportunities in some way, shape, or form, but I haven't sort of come across anything specifically. But obviously the food sector is one that probably needs a lot of help.
I know the food bank is, they're definitely going to be needing some help. I've put out a thing there for us to maybe help them out as well. And I also heard some news yesterday that the Portland Hotel Society is definitely in need of some people to help them down there. It sounds like they're in need of some assistance as well. So, I mean, like there's definitely, people are going to definitely find ways to be innovative and doing, and like you said, using whatever skills and talent that they have and resources. And, you know, I think this is, we're definitely going to, I think, like you said, I think we're going to see a lot of really brave and smart and creative people coming up with some really cool things to make sure that we get through this all together. And I think that's really exciting. And I'm really kind of eager to see what's on the horizon for all that. And hopefully we can keep reporting about it. And you know, just, I'm here to help in any way. So if anybody ever needs anything, and if you ever need a platform and you want to, we're here to, if you want to get your voice out there and you want to make sure that people know what's going on, do send a note out to us for sure. But I agree with you on that. And, you know, that's the only thing I'm really fearful about, is especially coming out of this, is that when you're talking about wildebeest and it might not come back in its current form, that scares me in some ways, is people might want something different, or people probably won't be able to afford certain things when they come back. And that scares me when you think about certain establishments. It's like, there's definitely that is there to kind of keep in the back of your mind, but definitely it's very, very unimportant right now. But
no, I think, you know, it's the volunteerism, I think, is lovely. Obviously there's going to be a lot of people with time on their hands, you know, and there's going to be more coming out, I know, from City Hall and from the medical community in ways that, you know, we can participate and help out as needed. So just keep an eye out for that. I think you're going to see some pretty cool things come out of this. So that is something to be excited about, you know, like, and thank goodness it's happening, you know, for now, this time of year, like the sun is out, and I look forward to going to shop at the farmer's market, you know, and supporting those guys soon, you know, like, of course, I don't think we'll see those crowded lineups. Maybe they'll be spread out around the park or something, but, you know, that kind of like distance community involvement, you know, hopefully that's allowed and permitted, but you know, that's going to be something to look forward to. So that's really it. Other than that, you know, once things settle down a little bit, we know what's going on. I'm just going to catch up on some reading and hang out with my kids and watch some Netflix, man.
Yeah. I don't have Netflix, but I've been playing a lot of video games, so that's keeping me going. But a couple of cool things that I've experienced is our mutual friend Megan started a really interesting thing called the Quarantine, and it's basically a video chat dance party for people who are self-isolating. I thought that was a really cool idea. I heard of some stuff going on in Seattle where people are doing group movie watching sessions via video conferencing. Those things are really cool. Our particular outlet, which is the Jetside Lounge and Globe, where I work at the Fairmont FBA at the airport, started like a group chat thread. So Ben, shout outs if you're listening, who's initially started just to keep us all in contact. And now it's just this really fun, like, gift sharing thing. So I think when you lose, as humans, we're so used to close contact and the sensation of touch as a feeling notion. When you lose that, it's kind of difficult. And like you said, the mental health fallout from this, which is what you were talking about earlier, we have to be really cognizant of that. With all the progress we've made in the world in all major industries, be it entertainment or sports or whatever, just the advances in the awareness of mental health that we've gone through in the past 2 years, we've got to really be mindful of that and keep that in the forefront. And, you know, good thing we live in the age of social media where we can all keep in contact.
Yeah, I would. I know I've talked to some friends about doing a little book club in the park, you know, once a month, which I think is a great idea. And I would hopefully, you know, if the world comes out of this a little bit more literate and in touch with each other that way, I think that would be lovely. Another suggestion would be that, you know, we've got thousands of animals in the shelters in Vancouver, you know, and dogs and cats are immune to this shit. So, you know, maybe you didn't have time on your hands before to get yourself a cat, you know, or a dog, but maybe this is the time, you know, and then that's going to help you. Maybe you live alone and, you know, you need a little something to cuddle or something, then, you know, go and save an animal and give yourself some peace as well too. You know, I think little things like that might bring some joy into people's lives.
Yeah, I was going to say, also, I forgot to mention the shout-outs to Jacob Sweetapple. I saw that he started a virtual cocktail kind of challenge. He's basically making a cocktail, and then he's nominating some people to kind of, like, donate money in a virtual kind of cocktail drink thing. So I noticed that yesterday, so I thought that was pretty cool. And, you know, like you said, I mean, people are finding ways to be creative and kind of try to stay connected in some ways. And, yeah, hopefully a lot of people come out of this well-read and have watched reruns of every Netflix thing that they're addicted to. And yeah, this is, it's kind of crazy. I definitely have been watching a lot of basketball, so I've been very stoked about that.
Yeah, NBA, they gave everyone a month free of like their entire catalog of classic NBA games and stuff like that. So nice. That's been keeping me going a little bit too.
Yeah, I was watching old 2001 Lakers stuff, and then I was watching 2003 Lakers Spurs. So Robert Horry missed that fucking shot and they would have won that damn series. That's so pissed off.
Yeah.
Robert Horry made a lot of those shots though too.
Yeah, he made a lot of those shots. But I mean, the one year he hits the ones in Houston in the 90s and hits the and he misses the one in 03 and then he goes to San Antonio in 05 and basically wins the 05 title. And I'm just like, you had to miss that. He won four in a row. So, So let's end this on a kind of somewhat of a positive note. Gentleman asked you yesterday if you guys can think of, you know, something that you guys are watching right now, either a movie, TV, music, and book recommendation. So, James, I'll let you go first.
Last time I came on the show, you guys were about to go down to California for that music festival. And Ricky got me into Shintaro Sakamoto. And that shit is really good, cleaning your house, upbeat, positive music. And I've been definitely listening to a lot of that. So, if anybody out there has not listened to Shintaro Sakamoto, I will definitely also second Mickey's plug for that, for him. Awesome artist, cool. Really positive music, and I love it. I watched a movie I was going to mention, though. I watched Jojo Rabbit with my kids a couple of weeks ago, and that's a pretty awesome movie about, well, a different kind of hardship, obviously. But it's light and warm, and it's adorable, and I think it'll lift your spirits. So I would definitely recommend that film as well.
So I've been playing a lot of retro video games. I know that the Nintendo Switch has like a community games thing where you can play Smash Brothers and stuff like that. And a lot of people that I work with have signed up for that. I'm a retro gamer though. So I've been playing a lot of like Zelda and like Tetris and stuff like that, mainly because I'm super bored and also the nostalgia factor. For a film, I'm not going to recommend anything, but I'm going to recommend an animated series that only had two seasons, and it's called Ugly Americans, and it was on Comedy Central in the States, and it's just a really hilarious look on what New York City would be like if instead of there was different races, everyone was a different species of animal, demon, anything like that. Just really out there, super hilarious cartoon. Highly recommend.
See, for TV, I figured I'd pick something that kind of hits us all. Have you guys ever heard of the show The Leftovers?
Nope.
No? Nope. Okay. It's a show that came on HBO a couple of years ago, and it basically talks about, it's a book written about 10 years ago, but it's a show where all of a sudden 2% of the world's population vanishes, and people have to kind of deal with the leftovers. So I figured that was kind of poignant. So it's pretty totally cool. And it's done by David Simon, the guy who did The Wire. So. And then music, I'm actually really big into the new Real Estate album right now, the main thing. So I'm pretty stoked about that. Really nice, light, upbeat, really good indie music. And then book, I just finished reading Marcia Gay Harden's book called Franchise. It's The Golden Arches in Black America. And it talks about how poignant and important McDonald's and kind of the rise of the fast food industry was for Black wealth. So it's kind of an interesting book, and it definitely is kind of a food and culture book. So if you guys are interested in that, I'm pretty sure people have their own taste and people are going to find a lot of things, but hopefully someone out there will be interested in some of our recommendations here. I second that Shintaro Sakamoto, by the way. I'm definitely a big fan of Shintaro. So.
Yeah. We almost saw him. Almost.
Yeah, no, we almost did. So, gentlemen, this has been good. We want to make sure that everyone out there listening, you know, just try to stay positive. Whatever your situation, reach out to those you love. And if you are in need of any guidance, make sure there's groups out there. Mind the Bar is a great, initiative for mental health. If anybody wants to reach out to them, I know that they're definitely out there.
Can I put a little plug in too? The Vancouver Food and Beverage Community is a new website and Slack channel that's been started, as I mentioned earlier, originally, I believe, by Dala from Super Baba, some guys from Tacofino. I've been in, you know, just participating in the chat. But they've set up a website. It's VanFBC, as in Food Beverage Community, vanfbc.com. You can join the Slack channel, and there's lots of sub-channels organized that can give everybody help on subjects like how to get the support you need from the government. There's a business owner section. There is stuff about mental health on there. And it's a really good resource. And so for everybody who's listening to this that might be in our industry, jump on that and grow that community, because we're all going to need to help each other. Thank you.
Yeah. And I guess we forgot to mention that, but they're going to be, they're looking for donations, and anybody out there who will eventually be in need of cash, looks like they're going to be donating $25 and up to $150 to people who are going to be in need of bills and rent and stuff like that. So if you've got some money to support, every little bit helps. And like I said, we're all in this together, and that's a great initiative. And yeah, that's a great thing to plug there, James. Thank you so much. We will get through this as a society. We are strong, especially as a restaurant community. I'm seeing nothing but great initiatives amongst so many people that I know and respect. And I think it's only going to get better. And I think we're going to come out from this very positively. I think we're going to have stronger skins, and I think we're going to learn a lot about ourselves and make sure that, you know, that we're going to be better for it. James, I want to thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, buddy.
And we hope that you and your staff are well taken care of. And I hope that you guys are doing well. And let us know if you have anything you want to talk about in the future. If you want to come back on again, we will always have you on. Maybe we'll get Josh on as well. And
we have lots of time on our hands.
Yeah. Well, right, always now. Love chatting with you guys, boys. Thank you so much.
You can find our podcast, as always. I forgot to mention this, but we are sponsored by Scout Magazine. You might not see us on Scout right now. They've done a little bit of pause on some stuff, but we are working always with Scout Magazine. I write for Scout. If you don't know much about Scout Magazine, it's a food and culture magazine here based in Vancouver. Anything you want to learn and stay up to date with stuff like that, Andrew and Michelle are definitely putting out some great work right now. It's scoutmagazine.ca, and if you live on the island, they have an island website called islandist.ca, so if you want to check them out, do check out that if you live out there. As always, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on our website, midrangevancouver.com, or obviously on Scout. We hoped that you pass us along. Do check out us again, and have a good day, boys.